And that's the story.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mike and Scott, in for Marty Moscowain. This week, we're taking time to remember 9/11 and to discuss how the country has changed over the past decade. Joining us now is Moeen Khawaja. He is the executive director of the Philadelphia chapter of the Council on American-Islamic Relations. Moeen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me on, Mike, and appreciate it.
And Moeen, where were you on September 11th, 2001?
You know, I was actually in college, and we had just, since it was September, we were only within a week of school. I still remember it, you know, very vividly. My mom had called me about 8 in the morning. She said, "You've got to turn the TV on," and that's all she said. And my mom's not someone, I mean, she's never said that. You know, she's not someone to tell me to turn the TV on or even watch the news. So I knew right when she said that with her voice shaking that something was happening. I turned it on, and you know, I got all my roommates to start watching the TV. And I remember their reactions and most of my Muslim friends. And it went something like, you know, "Oh, my gosh, I can't believe this is happening. Someone is really, really attacking America." And then, of course, a few of us had family and friends in New York. We were all trying to make phone calls. As you know, the phones didn't really work. So we all just skipped class and watched TV. But then came the second thought. After a few hours, when the second plane hit and it was clear that it was a terrorist attack, it was, "Please, please don't let it be Muslims. Because if it is, this changes everything." And sure enough, it did.
Hmm. And how old were you at the time?
I was actually a freshman in college, so I was 18 years old.
And where had you grown? Where did you grow up?
I went to college at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, and I grew up all my life in Springfield, Illinois, and Chicago was always like a second home to me as well. So I've only been out in the East Coast for about 3 years now.
And you said, "Please don't let it be Muslims."
Mm-hmm.
When did you find out that it had been an extreme group?
Well, as soon as the second plane hit, they started, you know, speculating that it was Al-Qaeda, and then we saw pictures of Osama bin Laden flash across the screen, and the taglines underneath and the captions underneath each picture said Muslim extremist or Islamic terrorist, and it wasn't just terrorists, it wasn't just Al-Qaeda. It was always prefaced with Islam or Muslims, and I thought, okay, this is something that's going to be pinned on the entire faith. You know, it's always been a double hit for Muslims in America, 9/11. The first hit, our country was attacked. You know, we donated blood. Many Muslim first responders went to the scene. It's our country, and we were attacked. But then, you know, to this day, I feel like Al-Qaeda attacked me twice, once by murdering so many fellow citizens, but the second time by smearing my faith, by smearing the very thing that causes me to do good, to treat my parents right, to give charity, and to be a good citizen, by making that beautiful thing to me into a very nasty and ugly and tarnished thing. And I will never forgive Al-Qaeda for that. Never.
And at the time you were on a college campus, did people start to treat you differently? Was there any immediate backlash?
No. In fact, we had some very, very great experiences that really, you know, I still recall these experiences, and they really caused me to believe in America and never lose hold of that belief. For example, we had a mosque on campus, and a lot of churches, we had great relationships with churches nearby, and a lot of them had called the police and said, you need to go guard the mosque, make sure nothing happens to it. People left flowers, I mean, it was clear that it was an attack by a foreign group, and the Muslim community in America wasn't a suspect domestically. I'm very sad to say that that's not the case entirely now, 10 years later. But right after, you know, the days and the weeks following, you know, we were Americans just like everyone else, and that's it.
And did you see a lot of things on television and in the subsequent media coverage that was inaccurate or made you mad? I think sometimes when everybody starts trying to talk about something they don't really know a whole lot about, you start hearing all kinds of things. So was there a lot of misconceptions that you heard about your faith that...
Certainly there were, but, you know, I don't blame the media entirely. I don't blame Americans entirely. See, we weren't... I mean Muslims in America, we didn't have the proper built-up infrastructure. We didn't do a lot of media work. We didn't go out and speak and talk about who we were. There were only a few national Muslim organizations. And it doesn't help when Osama bin Laden himself and Al-Qaeda themselves described themselves as Muslims and performing a Muslim duty. I think if they were just, say, Afghanis, and they had a problem with America, and then it would be an attack from Afghanistan on America. But that's not how they spun it. They always said, we're doing this because it was we believed our religion told us to. And, you know, certainly they had foreign policy grievances, but they always mixed in religion with it. So it really, you know, we wanted to say, hold on, stop. They don't represent anyone. In fact, we don't even consider them to be Muslims. How could you be a Muslim and believe in this and do this? But it really didn't help when one of their main talking points was, you know, we're doing this because we think God told us to.
Were people asking you about your experience, your fellow students, your professors at school?
Yeah, I did get some phone calls, especially from concerned friends of mine who weren't Muslim, to make sure that everything was okay, that no one had hurt us or anything. Now, certainly there was a backlash. I remember, you know, we got some hate mail and things like that. And every now and then somebody would shout on the street. They'd scream, hey, jihadi, go home or what have you. But I personally did not experience any physical or verbal attack, you know, anything that stirred me. Now, a lot of Muslims have, and, you know, that's something we still deal with here at CARE on a regular basis.
So talk a bit about your identity growing up, and maybe tell us a little bit about your family background. Are, you know, did you feel you were an American first, a Muslim second? How did you think of yourself before and after 9/11?
That's a great point. I was actually very lucky. I mean, as I said, I was 18 when it happened, so I had a pretty good sense of who I was in terms of identity. I had formed a healthy identity. I was always American. I was born and raised here. There's no other home for me. I don't know anything else to be my home. And, you know, my parents were immigrants from Pakistan. They came in the 70s. I was born in the 80s. But still, I was always, you know, I played sports. I was very active in high school, what have you. So I was always American by nationality. That was always my country, and I was a Muslim by faith. I just prayed to God like a Muslim. I never felt or still feel that these are mutually exclusive things by any stretch of the imagination. So I had a very secure, confident idea of who I was and where I was going. Now, we see through the work that I do with CARE, we see a lot of Muslim youth, you know, adolescents, 11, 12, 13-year-old kids who get bullied, who get called names, get called terrorists. They're very unsure of whether they truly belong here. They're also born and raised here. But growing up in this time, post 9/11, is very tough for teenagers who are forming their identities and trying to, you know, get a real sense of who they are. And so we're trying to do a lot of work to tell them, hey, look, you might be bullied, you might be called names, but this is your home. This is where your loyalties must lie. And I think we've done a good job. But then, of course, a few have slipped through the cracks. But personally, I'm very confident that I belong here. In fact, I do. I don't ever feel insecure about that. And I'm confident that Muslims in America will also develop that security, especially for those who don't have that just yet.
We're talking with Muin Khawaja. He's the executive director of the Philadelphia chapter of the Council on American Islamic Relations, and you call it, you say CARE, right?
Mm-hmm.
For short.
Yeah, right.
Yes, just if you've heard that, that's what we're referring to. And if you want to weigh in with your questions or comments, please give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's Radio Times here at 1-888-477-9499. And Muin, you seem to say that in the immediate aftermath of the terrorist attacks, things were not so bad, but now there were times when relations have deteriorated. So do you feel like we're worse off now than we were immediately after?
I wouldn't say worse off. Certainly, there was an immediate backlash in 2001, 2002, and then to 2003 when the Iraq War started. But then 05, 06, 07, things kind of got better for Muslims in America. And then we were very upset to see that there was a big uptick in backlash in 07, 08, and 09. And we think this correlates with a few things. It correlates with the economy, for sure. But in a strange way, it also correlates with the election of President Obama. See, when Bush was president, the very first time he addressed the nation, he said, "Look, we were not attacked by Islam. We were not at war with a religion." He always went out of his way to say Islam is a religion of peace. Muslims have been in America for hundreds of years, and they are our fellow citizens. When that voice of moderation left the conservative movement, that really opened the floodgates for a lot of right-wing commentators and anti-Muslim organizations to jump on and say, okay, now this is our chance to pump up the rhetoric. Because we found when responsible rhetoric comes from Republican leaders, it actually ends up being a very good thing for Muslims. Now, President Obama has certainly engaged in responsible rhetoric as well. But then the other side doesn't listen to him. In fact, the other side, a big portion of them think he's a Muslim. So that kind of created a situation where, we have a lot of organizations devoted to saying, well, look, yes, we were attacked on 9/11, but Islam itself and Muslims themselves, including Muslims in America, have the potential to become terrorists just like anyone else. And that's the real twist we've seen over the last few years.
And I want to ask you how the issue of extremism comes up within your community and within your faith community. And do you talk about it differently when you're amongst yourself, so to speak, or when you're communicating a message? Is it a worry? How is it talked about?
No, we're at the end of the day, Muslims still feel that homegrown radicals are such a small minority that for us to even come across one, I think since 9/11 there's been 150 American Muslims who have been arrested or have engaged in plots or have expressed the interest in engaging in plots. Of course, that's one too many, but out of a population of 6 million, it's really I can't name a lot of people who know someone directly who said extreme things or even supported terrorism in any way. However, it is a concern, as I said, with kids forming their identities, not knowing how to, express dissatisfaction with foreign policy, not having proper outlets to express grievances. We're seeing them retreat away from mosques where they can be moderated, where they can speak to a mentor. We're seeing those kids go away and then form their own chat groups online. And that's really the core of the issue. A lot of radicalization has been occurring online, and that's very hard to monitor. It's very hard to police. It's very hard to see who's doing what in their basement. So the other thing is mosque leadership, it doesn't want to be associated with anybody who's extreme. So whenever someone expresses anything out of the ordinary, there is, restraining orders are served and they're asked to leave. So where there might be an opportunity to talk to someone, get them to calm down, those people are asked to leave.
So they are outcasts, so to speak.
Yeah.
And I spoke with another Arab American leader in this area who said he felt the community has been silenced on many levels, especially newer immigrants. And maybe their kids are bullied in school, or maybe they are being called names, but they are afraid to say anything because they fear retribution. Is that something you've experienced? You hear?
Yeah, of course. I mean, a lot of people have lost confidence. In fact, we hear story after story of, Muslim women who had once previously worn the scarf, the headscarf. They've taken it off so that they fit in and don't have eyes drawn onto them. But at the same time, we've seen a lot of stories of empowerment. We've seen a lot of Muslim kids say, listen, I don't want to be a lawyer or a doctor or go to business school. I want to become a journalist. I want to go out there and create stories and write plays and write novels and books because we have to talk about who we are. So we've seen a little bit of both. Some people have pulled back, especially those who've experienced, you know, a hate crime or vandalism or harassment at work. We've seen them sort of retreat, and then we've also seen a new group of people step up and say, listen, we can't just hide in the shadows. We have to say who we are, what we believe in, and how we plan to contribute to America. And I think that's a very healthy development.
Let's take a very quick call from Sarah. She's joining us from Yardley. Hi, Sarah. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to add to something that Mr. Moeen is saying, which is, and I'm sorry, when I was on hold, I couldn't hear the radio. So regarding, like, Muslim victims, I'm Muslim myself, and in the sense that I think they really had a double whammy, that if they had lost loved ones in the World Trade Center or in the other two situations, that the other two tragedies, that they were carrying this double burden of, particularly if they're visibly Muslim, that they were suffering as victims or families of victims, but you know, perhaps being harassed or otherwise in public, being that they looked Muslim. And just a quick story, I wear hijab myself, the Muslim woman's headdress, and I was traveling to Florida several months later, and a young woman in front of me was reading, I guess it was about a year later, the People edition of babies that were born after 9/11 to fathers that had died there. And one of the women was wearing hijab, one of the 50 women that they cited. And I felt the woman was sitting right in front of me who was reading it, and I kind of just, you know, was watching her, and I saw her read each biography of the mothers, and as she got to her page, she just quickly turned it and went on to the next. And I felt sort of that insensitivity, sort of like as if her suffering was less, or her, I felt it was a little bit sad, you know, more so that maybe the same woman, when she went out, was getting more glares, getting more harassing comments, but she too was a victim, lost her husband. And I just think that's there also, and I think the Al-Qaeda mentality would kill American Muslims before they would kill non-Muslim Americans. They have more of a hatred for us because they consider us too moderate.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for that call, Sarah. And Moeen, we only have about a minute left. So is that suspicion, that kind of, you know, what Sarah just described, being the other, is that still very much part of a lot of Arab Americans' lives?
Yes, unfortunately it is. I think if we could end on one note, I think a good microcosm of how Muslim Americans felt can be relayed through the story of Salman Hamdani, for example. He was a 23-year-old paramedic in New York City. Yeah. He had rushed into the World Trade Center to help and unfortunately died when the towers collapsed. Now, the few days that he was missing, people started to...
I'm sorry, I hate to interrupt you, but we're
sure
coming up on a break, so I want to thank you so much for joining us today, and we
thank
have to move on with Radio Times. And Moeen is the executive director of the Philadelphia chapter of the Council on American-Islamic Relations. We'll talk about how the threat of terrorism has changed the urban landscape next here on Radio Times. And you're listening to Radio Times on WHYY.